When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
U.S. economic growth slows, but inflation proves sticky. Is the dream of interest rate cuts slipping away?
The Fed typically wants to have inflation around a 2% annualized rate. And what economists fear with some of this recent data is that inflation will actually settle closer to 3%.
And J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon casts doubt on the possibility of a soft landing. Plus, how the Energy Department plans to fast-track power grid construction across the U.S. It's Thursday, April 25th. I'm Pierre Bien-Aimé for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The U.S. economy continued growing in the first quarter, but at a slower pace. The Commerce Department said GDP expanded by 1.6% at a seasonally and inflation-adjusted annual rate. But stubbornly high inflation is still dashing investors' hopes that the Federal Reserve will begin cutting interest rates in the coming months. I'm joined now by The Wall Street Journal's markets reporter, David Uberti. David, why are we seeing this slowdown? Is it due to the fact that interest rates have stayed high?
Well, this is sort of a choose-your-own-adventure report. And depending on whether you're an investor or an economist, you could have a wildly different takeaway. Consumers across the U.S. continued to spend in the first quarter, which suggests that a lot of the wage growth and hiring that we've seen, and which the Fed really wants to tamp down on in certain respects, continues to boost U.S. consumption and U.S. GDP. At the same time, the slowdown was weighed down by international trade fluctuations as well as a slowdown in business inventory spending. And economists say that those factors can swing pretty wildly on a quarter-to-quarter basis. So the folks that we've spoken to said essentially this report is a steady-as-she-goes outlook for the U.S. economy, which remains pretty robust at this point.
So inflation seems to be pretty persistent, and we'll get more details on that tomorrow when the same Commerce Department releases figures for March specifically. What's on the Fed's mind now as far as future rate decisions go?
The Fed is really looking into sort of the price pressures in the service sector, and that is very tied to how wages perform in the coming months as well as how hiring performs across employers in the country. The Fed typically wants to have inflation around a 2% annualized rate. And what economists fear with some of this recent data is that inflation will actually settle closer to 3%, which would be a big change over the course of time and obviously ends up hurting Americans' pocketbooks with just some of those higher prices taking a bigger bite out of your paycheck.
That was The Wall Street Journal's markets reporter, David Uberti. The latest snapshot of the U.S. economy rattled stock and bond markets with its two bits of potentially disappointing data, slower economic growth and still firm inflation. The inflation reading sparked a sell-off in bonds, sending yields on the 10-year Treasury to above 4.7%, their highest level since November. U.S. stocks fell, meanwhile, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average sliding 1%, or 375 points. According to CME Group, investors are now pricing in a 19% chance that the Fed will hold interest rates steady through the year. That's up from below 1% a month ago. Staying with the economy, in an interview with Wall Street Journal editor-in-chief Emma Tucker, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon said he is skeptical that inflation will come down smoothly and doesn't agree with the market's bets on that happening.
You have to look a little bit in context. The consumer's in pretty good shape right now. Because of that, business is in pretty good shape too, because people spend, it creates profits. The one thing you got to be cautious about, a lot of it is driven by just fiscal spending. Mm-hmm. So even today, the deficit is 6% of GDP, almost $2 trillion. That's driving a lot of this growth, and that will have other consequences possibly down the road called inflation, which may not go away like people expect. So when I look at the range of possible outcomes, you know, you can have that soft landing. I'm a little more worried that it may not be so soft and inflation may not go away people expect. I'm not talking about just this year. I'm talking about 25 and 26. The rates may have to go up a little higher. I'm talking about the 10-year rate, the 5-year rate, and you know, that can have consequences. So we'll see.
Our exclusive interview with the J.P. Morgan CEO covered the economic outlook, geopolitical risks, and artificial intelligence. You can watch it on WSJ.com. The National Basketball Association is moving toward a series of major media deals. Amazon and Google's YouTube are vying for a new streaming package, while NBC Universal tries to grab one of the main TV deals held by Disney's ESPN and Warner Brothers Discovery's TNT. Media rights talks have been happening against the backdrop of the NBA playoffs. And speaking of basketball, we want to hear from you on an issue in the sport. After going pro as the number one pick in the WNBA draft, former Iowa superstar Caitlin Clark will make a starting salary of just $76,000, compared to over $12 million for the NBA's top selection. That's despite the fact that she lit up this year's March Madness basketball tournament, propelling the women's final beyond the men's in TV viewership. So what questions do you have about the economics between men's and women's pro sports? Send us a note, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send it to WNPOD@WSJ.com. That's WNPOD@WSJ.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4328. Just be sure to include your name and location because we might use it on the show. Coming up, the U.S. Supreme Court appears open to some of Donald Trump's immunity claims. More after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
The Supreme Court today considered Donald Trump's bid to avoid trial on charges he tried to steal the 2020 election. The former president faces four criminal counts related to his role in the weeks leading up to and the day of his supporters' attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. The court entertained Trump's claim that he can't be tried on the grounds that he should enjoy absolute immunity for actions he took as president. Wall Street Journal Supreme Court correspondent Jess Braven joins me now. Jess, welcome back.
Hi, Pierre.
So where did the justices seem to be leaning today?
Well, the majority of the court seemed very open to the argument by John Sawyer, Trump's lawyer, that there has to be a level of immunity or protection for presidents after they leave office from criminal prosecution, because otherwise future presidents might be fearful of taking bold actions to protect the nation or help the nation if they thought their political opponents might someday enter the White House and prosecute them. So this potential threat, which is really the core of Trump's argument, made a lot of headway, I think, with the majority of the court. Not to the degree that Trump has expressed it. I mean, he's made a claim for absolute immunity for all kinds of actions. So that danger to the presidency seemed to carry a lot of weight with the majority of the court, and they were concerned that future presidents have some protection from prosecution after they leave office, so they will not be chilled in taking bold actions to advance the nation's interest.
And are you talking about a majority of the bench? And is it splitting typically along liberal and conservative lines?
Well, and again, we have to say these are questions come from the court, and what they actually decide to do after they have their private conferences and circulate memos and so forth remains to be seen. But based on what they said at the oral argument, there seem to be five justices quite sympathetic to the argument that the executive needs to have a lot of leeway to do what it wants and that the potential for future prosecution would be a deterrent to that. We saw, however, the liberal justices quite skeptical of that claim. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said she thought a much greater danger was telling future presidents that they would be free to do anything they want without any risk of prosecution, potentially turning the Oval Office into the crime center of the nation. Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who was the last of Trump's appointees when he was president, was, of the conservatives on the court, the most skeptical of Trump's argument and the most open to that presented by Michael Dreeben, representing special counsel Jack Smith.
Now, a final decision is, of course, forthcoming. But where does this leave Trump right now?
Well, since Trump raised the claim of absolute immunity from prosecution last year, special counsel Jack Smith has not been permitted to move ahead with the prosecution of Trump for his alleged effort to undo the 2020 election. So that case has been stalled for months and months, and it's likely to be stalled for at least another couple of months until the Supreme Court issues its decision on his claim of immunity.
That was Wall Street Journal Supreme Court correspondent Jess Braven. power grid projects in the U.S. face a patchwork of permitting processes from federal agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency, the Interior Department, and the Agriculture Department. Now, the Biden administration is consolidating that approval power into the Energy Department in order to speed upgrades and new clean energy construction, including for long-distance power lines that can move renewable energy from state to state. Here now with more is staff reporter Scott Patterson. Scott, what's the Energy Department saying they want to do with this authority?
Yeah, the Energy Department wants to speed up the construction of transmission lines across the country. This has been a big goal of the administration for several years. It's seen as really key to building out the clean energy infrastructure of the country because the more transmission you have, the easier it is to move this renewable energy to places that need it from the places that produce it. So it can move, say, energy from a solar farm in Idaho to a community in California. You need long-distance transmission lines to make that possible, though.
What's the state of the power grid now? Where's demand coming from, and is supply meeting it?
The power grid seems to be in pretty rough shape, according to grid planners and utilities. There's increasing storms and weather that's causing a lot more problems with the grid than it used to.
What's the demand looking like for energy in the near future?
This is a story that's been emerging in the past year or so, and it's tied around the infrastructure projects that the Biden administration has been encouraging with the Inflation Reduction Act, the Infrastructure Act, and push to increase the CHIPS Act of 2022. Those three things combined have sort of created an industrial renaissance in the U.S., which is demanding a lot more power from the grid. The other thing that's happened is because of AI, tech companies are racing to build more data centers all across the country. And these data centers are incredibly power hungry. Some of the new ones, the very, very big buildings, can demand as much power as a city the size of Seattle. So this is something that grid planners and utilities sort of got caught off guard by, and now they're trying to sort of scramble to catch up.
That was Wall Street Journal staff reporter Scott Patterson. Disgraced Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein's 2020 conviction for sex crimes was overturned today by New York's highest court. The decision upends one of the leading cases of the Me Too movement. In a divided ruling, the court said a trial judge had committed fundamental errors, including admitting testimony that shouldn't have been allowed. Today's ruling won't make the 72-year-old Weinstein a free man. A California jury convicted him in 2022 of rape and other offenses in a separate case. He was sentenced to 16 years in prison. And in the latest earnings news, Google's quarterly sales continued to accelerate. Its core advertising and cloud computing businesses performed well amid an expensive push in artificial intelligence. Google's parent company Alphabet reported $80.5 billion of first quarter revenue. That's an increase of 15% from the same period last year. Alphabet also said that it would start issuing a cash dividend to investors for the first time, paying out 20 cents a share in June. The company said it plans to continue paying quarterly cash dividends, subject to board approval. And Microsoft's profit rose last quarter as well. Excitement about artificial intelligence bolstered demand for its software and cloud services. The tech giant's revenue rose 17% from a year earlier to $61.9 billion, beating analysts' estimates. Its net income rose 20% to $21.9 billion. Microsoft has been among the biggest winners in the AI race, thanks to its close relationship with ChatGPT maker OpenAI. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi, with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. I'm Pierre Bien-Aimé for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening.